I'm Gordon Green, and there'll be more Macquarie National news at 9 o'clock on your newsleader 873 2GB.
And now on 2GB, Scott and Nick at night.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome along to Scott and Nick at Night on 2GB. It's good to be with you once again.
It's great.
Nick, how are you going?
I'm doing well, mate. Really good.
Did you have a good day?
Not a bad one. A lot of commotion, a lot of good news coming in through.
A lot of good news, but a little bit of bad news as well, which we'll be looking at a little bit later. Another bomb attack in Saudi Arabia, which is a nasty, nasty thing over in that part of the world. We've got a big show coming up over the next couple of hours for you, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be discussing bail laws. That's been in the news a fair bit lately. Mm. Why is it seem that it's so easy for people to get bail? So we've got a QC that's going to be telling us about that, and we're going to be pitting him against a police officer.
Wow.
I think that ought to be a little bit exciting. We're also going to be looking at what is it that people... Why, I should say, is it that some people, like television stations, want to bring celebrities, supposed celebrities, out to this country? I'm thinking in particular, Nick, Paris and Nicky Hilton. I mean, what on earth was Kerry Stokes thinking when he brought them out? And didn't it do well for him? Channel 10 got all the publicity. Channel 7 got squat. So we're going to be looking into that. We're also going to be looking to see what would you do if you won Lotto? There was an article in the paper today.
Yeah. I know what I'd
that do. Has suggested that there's a whole bunch of people that have won Lotto, and apparently they don't want to rush out and buy
Porsches. Yeah,
and things like that. They want to pay off their mortgage and be good people. They want to donate some of their money to worthy causes. And so we're going to be posing the question as to what might you do if you had won Lotto and, I don't know, won $18 million.
Or to be fair, Powerball. Because you've got to give the other side a bit of a fair go as well.
Yep, no, fair call. That's perfectly reasonable. You might have a thought on that, and give us a call on 131 873. Now, Andrew Denton had Alan Bond on the telly the other night, and did you
see? I saw the whole interview.
What did you think?
I didn't think it was much chop, to be quite honest. I thought Andrew Denton didn't do a really good job.
Really? I don't mind Denton on television as an interviewer. I thought he did a reasonably good job. But it did concern me a bit that Alan Bond was, well, in La La Land, basically. I don't think there's any other word for it. The man is in complete self-denial. I didn't do it. No one saw me do it. No one can prove a thing.
But he's improved.
Well, he has indeed. At least he's got his memory back now. He can remember it. Do you remember when he was at the, going into the court cases and he had the television cameras and Paul Barry, I think, was the journalist that kept going up and sort of sticking his microphone in his face.
As he was walking up Phillip Street here in Sydney, the Law Street.
That's right,
in
the Law Street.
In that dazed look.
Very dazed.
Dazed.
He had that sort of... who was that other bloke from in Mallorca?
What's his name?
I can't think of his name.
Thingo.
The one that died.
Thingity Bob.
Yeah, him.
Yeah.
Anyway, he had sort of that same look, didn't he? You know, completely non... It looked like he was stoned. It did.
Can
it
we say
like
that?
Was, I think we can.
I think we can.
It looked like it, allegedly.
But how do you get your memory back, I'd like to know? What happens?
Ritalin.
Huh?
Drugs.
What?
Drugs. That's the ones. So he's blaming everyone for himself for his demise. He blamed the banks.
He did.
But of course, everyone in Australia blames the banks. So in fairness, he's not completely out of it on that same regard.
I thought there was a very clever little phrase that came out of that. When if you owe the banks $1,000, it's your problem. If you owe them $1 million, it's theirs.
Well, actually, it's if you owe them $1 million, it's yours. And if it's $100 million, it's theirs. And
because I'm
inflation said
I didn't consider the inflationary effect of that.
And you know, 100 million is more than you or I or anyone else that we ever know will ever see in their life. Prince Charles is in a spot of bother at the moment. News reports out of Europe where it's been alleged that there has been a liaison between himself and one of the palace staff.
Incident, they put it. They put
it
as an incident.
An incident.
A sexual incident.
I don't know what that means, but I look forward to investigating that a little bit. It's all been banned in England, of course, and I assume, therefore, by default, we would ban the news as well. But naturally, of course, the Italians and the Germans have spread it all over the front pages of all their newspapers. So it's out and about in the public arena. He yesterday, of course, denied that he knew anything about what it was that he couldn't possibly mention that he was denying. Which is a really complex issue, isn't it? In other words, he didn't know what it was that he was denying that he did, but he denied that he did it anyway.
The Queen's furious.
She's not a happy camper at all, is she? Do you think she sort of sits there and on the throne and goes, I'm furious with you?
I think she says exactly that.
Prince Philip the Greek, he wouldn't be happy about it at all.
Oh, no.
He's already in enough trouble over the Diana letters by that Paul Burrell, I think, with the former butler to Princess Diana, or sorry, Diana Princess of Wales. Although it did, I thought it showed him as in a nice light, to be honest. He sort of cared a little bit. So we'll be looking at the Prince Charles scandal coming up. There's a man in England who is running around with an angle grinder who is cutting, what do you call them, wheel clamps.
Wheel clamps.
Yes.
It's a gold-plated or a painted gold or something or other angle grinder. And doesn't he dress up in some superhero outfit?
He does. He's like, Angle Grinder Man! And so he goes around, and if your car has been wheel clamped, and you're lucky, he'll come along and cut it off for you.
He actually can fly, but the angle grinder weighs 1,000 pounds.
Yeah, so it makes it kind of difficult.
Take off.
We're going to also be asking about Kath and Kim. Now, you've watched this, haven't you, Nick?
Oh, yes.
I've watched a couple of episodes. Now, you and I are in the complete minority.
Oh, yeah.
A million people in Sydney alone, I think, virtually watch it.
Yeah,
I can't understand it. I can't
that
see
thing,
that
yeah.
It's funny. No. So, but we're going to be looking at that as well.
Yeah.
If you've got a thought, maybe, I don't know, maybe you're really keen on Kath and Kim. And if you are, we'd like to hear from you on 131873, because I can't understand it at all. Bob Carr's over in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
He spends a lot of time in New Zealand there.
Should stay there.
Now, but funny you should mention that. There's a lot of people that would say the very same thing. That he's got the big block of ground over there. Bought the big $375,000, three hectare property near Queenstown.
That's because he couldn't afford land in New South Wales.
Well, and he certainly couldn't afford the stamp duty on it, could he? let alone the GST or anything like that. What is that? $47,000 on your average block of ground is added to the price of it by government charges and taxes.
Unbelievable.
Could even be more than that. But he's over there sucking up, basically, to the Labor Party with Helen Clark in New Zealand. Maybe he's going to go for a job there. He didn't seem to be all that popular in the idea of going to Canberra, did he?
He might have abandoned federal politics totally now.
Well, I think he had to.
Because it's easier to get into politics in New Zealand.
Anyone can over there.
As long as you own a block of land.
I think that's about the size of it. You wander around in your wellies and pop down to Wellington in the big round building there in Wellington, the capital of New Zealand, and as long as you've got a block of ground and a pair of wellies, you're into Parliament down there. Steve Irwin's in a bit of trouble. A bit of controversy over that. He got $175,000 for the quarantine ads. Do you remember them?
Yes, I do.
Oh, crikey! This little bugger's going to go out and ruin Australia!
And he let the little bug escape from his fingertip.
He did. Next thing you know, some trees gone everywhere all over the place.
And he got paid for that, too.
$175,000. It turns out that it wasn't really for 3 days' work. It was for one year's work. That may or may not be the case. I don't know. I like Steve Irwin.
I like the bloke.
I think he's a top bloke. I think he's an Australian.
I wonder what he does with all his money. Certainly he doesn't spend it on clothing.
Well, no. See, he got all that clothing for free.
All that car key stuff.
Yeah. When he was doing his movies, he got all of that. The movie company, the producers, whoever it was, I don't know, Universal Studios, whoever, they had an entire wardrobe. I think Edith Head designed the khaki clothing for him, world famous fashion designer into the movies, and she designed all the khaki. So it's like your what's it? That French word, haute couture.
Yeah, that word.
That word. Yeah. Haute couture, khaki shorts and a King G shirt. So he's in a spot of bother as well. You might have a thought on him. We like him here at 2GB. And so maybe if you've got a thought, 131873.
He's been here in the studio too.
He has been here in the studio. I think he had a good chat with Chris Smith the other week.
Yep,
and I listened to it. I was fabulously impressed by him, even though he did call the Prime Minister the world's greatest Prime Minister. By the same token, Bob Hawke called Paul Keating world's greatest treasurer. What does that tell you? Pauline Hanson's, of course, out of jail and is considering a return into politics.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, I mean, she'd romp in if an election were held tomorrow.
Oh,
fact is, there's no election held for another 3 years. But
She's got all that time to build up the popularity, though.
Well, do you think they would, or do you think the public would, in 3 years' time, forget who she was?
No, I think she's attracted some voters that she otherwise wouldn't have attracted. I mean, going to jail was the best thing for her.
It's a bit like Elvis dying. Did him the world of good for his record sales. Mm. Maybe she needs Harry and Miller to sort of manage her and get her out there in the public
get
eye.
Get that PR machine happening and do
all the talk shows.
I loved, obviously, the PR machine was hard at work the other day. The first thing she did is she went to see a movie involving prisoners.
Yeah,
you could tell that was a PR machine happening. It wasn't a very good PR machine.
No, it was happening. But she had spent the day, the afternoon before going off to the movies, mowing the lawn out in the front of the house on the sit-down lawnmower. And I think that says a lot about Pauline. I like Pauline. I think she has a lot of interesting things to say. Yeah. Don't know whether some people agree with them or not. Also, in the second hour of the show, we're going to be speaking to a guy called David Parry.
Oh, I love David.
David's a man who, for some God only knows reason, has wandered around England and has photographed pubs.
60,000 of them.
600, I think, is actually the term.
Was it?
Yeah.
He's going for 60,000. Yes. Did you say he's up to 600?
He's up to 600.
He's got a long way to go.
59,400 approximately. But the man's like, he's only 72 or something, so he's got plenty of life left in him to do it. I don't know quite why he takes photographs of the outside of pubs rather than the inside, and whether or not he drinks so he could do a couple of pubs in a day and then he's sort of all over after that. I don't know. We'll find out about that after 9 o'clock.
Live? We're talking live?
Oh, absolutely live, yep. We're also going to be talking to Michael Tarzizzi, who's a PLO spokesman, who is going to be giving us his thoughts on the controversy surrounding the Sydney Peace Prize that was given to... I can't pronounce her name, I'm sorry.
Just spell it.
I can't even spell it. That terribly nice lady Helena Aswani, something like that. Yeah. We're really
up on that one, aren't we?
We like to be up on the... all the topics of the day. And, of course, the birthday of the day, we'll be covering that later.
Yep.
We'd like to talk to you guys about anything that you'd like on 131-873. And we'll see what else we might come up with in there as well. We will also, of course, have Mossy with his sports report. He was down at the Melbourne Cup the other day, and he's now back. So he'll be giving us the inside scoop of what he was up to down at the Melbourne Cup and also on the big matches last night with Australia and Scotland and New Zealand versus South Africa, and also, of course, the big rugby league match in England where we won.
Yep. And if you've got anything to say, really, it doesn't really matter what it is.
Yeah, if you've got a problem or anything like that, just give us a call on 131-873. If we can't fix it, we'll pass it on to one of the other personalities on 2GB that can fix it. Ray is good on that. Ray takes care of everything. He always does. gets them done. We subby out most of our jobs to Ray because he's far, far better at it than we are. But we'll give it a go and give you a bit of a helping hand if we possibly can. So all that and more coming up on Scott and Nick tonight on 2GB 873. And we'll come back with some thoughts on a few other subjects and some of your calls after this.
We're not just okay, we're not just good. As our name suggests, we're Australia's best tyre service. We offer fast, quality work while you wait. Local tyres, imported tyres, mags, we sell them all at discounted prices. And because we have the latest tyre fitting equipment, we ensure that your mags won't be scratched when they're being fitted. Remember the name, Australia's best tyre service. That's what we're called because that's what we are. Open 7 days, corner of Canterbury and Canaries Roads, Lecamba.
John Simon from Aussie Home Loans with another Simon Says. We all know the banks have milked us for billions of dollars with big fees and charges. Now, some of the non-bank lenders have joined them. They've also put fees on their home loans. They're playing the same game. As the biggest non-bank lender, Aussie will stick to our promise. No extra monthly fees on home loans. And we'll keep the pressure on the banks and the non-bank lenders who charge extra fees. Because when you add them all up, your home loan could cost you thousands of dollars more. So be careful. You've worked hard for your money. Don't throw it away on big fees. Shop around. And if you're not being looked after, call Aussie on 13 13 33. At Aussie, we'll save you.
With the weather warming up, what could possibly be better than sitting under the sails of the waterfront restaurant at the Rocks, overlooking the magnificent Sydney Harbour and feasting on the best seafood in the world? You could choose deep-fried salt and pepper prawns, barramundi or lobster fresh from the tank, or any of the other dishes that have made the waterfront renowned around the world as one of the best seafood restaurants. Whatever your choice, the waterfront has it, and has the perfect wine to complement your selection. Whether it be for a business lunch, a special occasion, or just a relaxing meal for two, the Waterfront Restaurant is the perfect venue. Call them on 9241 1234 to make a booking. The Waterfront Restaurant, The Rocks, overlooking Sydney Harbour.
Out here in the Simpson Desert, it rains about every few years or so, if you're lucky. So every single drop of water is precious. That's why you won't catch me using just any cordial. Only Brooks cordials are good enough to go into my water. Made with superior ingredients, no other cordial quenches like Brooks. And the great news is, Brooks cordials are now available in all those big smoke supermarkets. Don't waste your water on anything else.
Scott and Nick at Night. Have your say on 131 873.
Yeah, that's the number to call. 131 873, Scott and Nick. Bondi was on Denton the other night, Nick, and I know you saw the whole thing. I saw a fair bit of it, and he's basically in denial.
But he's looking good.
Anyway, he's looking very well, isn't he?
He's looking...
He had the big monogram sort of cresty thing on his jacket.
I've got one of those.
Oh, really? Very impressive. Mm. And I thought that looked nice. And he had the book, of course, there on his knee, ready to flog.
Promoted it quite well.
He did.
He slipped it in whenever he could.
Yeah, he kind of held it up and pum, there it was in the public's face. Did you think he looked as though he was sorry?
I don't know. I didn't think... I'll be honest, I didn't think Andrew Denton handled the interview terribly well.
Really?
No, didn't think so. I think he was a bit aggro, a bit aggressive.
Well, I suppose, given the fact that Bondi has the reputation that he has... Denton sort of wanted to try and, you know, exploit that a bit.
Yeah, Denton had the figures, the statistics, the information, and you could see the agenda was... Let's try and discredit Alan Bond, but I think Alan Bond was discredited years ago.
Well, yeah.
You know, why revisit all that?
Yeah, yeah, you know? No, I see where you're coming from. Although he did bring it out that he'd, been almost killed in jail.
Yep. So he should have explored that a little bit more, because it was interesting. That was interesting.
Mm. And he found God in jail. Mm-hmm.
In
fairly
the
common
next,
thing.
The next cell.
Yeah.
Apparently. He's always there.
He's always in the next cell. Isn't it amazing how many times people are in jail and they find God? Yeah. I suppose there's not a lot else to do in there.
No, there's not a great deal to do.
I don't know whether Pauline found God when she was in jail or not.
She may have.
Probably did.
But all in all, it was an okay interview. I was interested to hear from Alan Bond, especially his views on the lifestyle that he used to lead and how he's sort of fallen from grace now. I have a theory I think Alan Bond will jump back on his feet again.
I've got no doubt at all.
I think he'll be one of the billionaires again.
I've got no doubt at all that he'll jump back. I don't know whether the public of Australia will necessarily support him. There's a lot of people around that think, oh, well, he stayed and did his time.
But see, people have short memories.
Oh, that's true.
And don't forget, there's a new generation coming along who haven't really heard of Alan Bond.
Well, it was 20 years ago that he won the Cup.
Yep.
That's a fair call. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where it does take him. Mm. If you've got a thought on that, 131 873. Nick, another case of allegedly bail being really easy to get. There's a guy in the paper today who, over a 5-month period, applied for bail 8 times and was finally released on October 29th. Yeah. So naturally, of course, Andrew Tink is furious with police to give this bloke bail. And it's, again, another what appears to be case of bail being really, really easy to get. And apparently, I don't know, that's not really the case. And I think
we've got on the line, though, to debate this, a detective in the New South Wales Police Service. We can't name him or give his full name because of, obviously, privacy and confidentiality issues. And also on the line to enter into the debate is a barrister in New South Wales, Alexander Howen. Welcome to both of you.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Nick.
Guys, Alex, I'll start with you. The perception is that the bail is really easy to get. It's almost as if, you know, the public, the way the public thinks is that you someone like yourself pops into to court and says, "Well, give my client bail," and everyone wanders off and has a great time. Is that kind of how it works?
Well, guys, you shouldn't believe everything you see on the front page of the Daily Telegraph.
No,
it isn't. In fact, in actual fact, bail is very difficult to get, and the remand centre at Silverwater is chock-a-block full of people who can't get bail, and their families haven't got hope of raising what they need to give them bail.
Okay.
Now, I wanted to come to that point a little bit later, because I want to raise something about the overcrowding in the jail. So, if I forget, can someone remind me? When you say, look, how hard is it? I mean, what does one have to do as a advocate to convince a magistrate or judge to give bail to your client, for example?
Are you asking me that, Nick?
Yes, I am. I'm asking you that.
Okay. Well, there are some offences where bail is a presumption against bail. Serious drug offences, for example. The court starts from a position where the person is not likely to get bail, and the applicant has to convince the court why they should get it.
Right.
Other more minor offences, there's no presumption against it, and it's much easier.
What does that mean? No presumption, does that mean you automatically get bail?
No, you still have to make an application and show that you are someone who will turn up again, is unlikely to reoffend. So one looks at the criminal history. If you've got a long record of reoffending,
mm-hmm.
Well, the chances are you won't get bail and you shouldn't.
Right.
If you've got a history of not turning up to court.
But the fact that there's no presumption against bail in some cases does mean that it is easier to get bail.
I'd like to jump in here, boys.
Yeah.
There's no presumption of bail for the offence of armed robbery.
Right.
And if you're arrested for the offence of armed robbery, you're immediately bail refused and sent to court the next day, and the magistrate then will remand you in custody pending an application further on at the Supreme Court or another arena like that. You may afford yourself some bail opportunities, but there's no presumptions of bail for the offence of armed robbery.
Right.
But that doesn't mean a magistrate will automatically agree to the police position that bail shouldn't be granted. The police would have everybody locked up all the time, every time.
No, but just for the offence of armed robbery, I'm saying there's no presumption for bail for the offence of armed robbery.
You mean the alleged offence of armed robbery?
Yeah.
You have
That's
to
right.
prove it, don't you?
Exactly.
So just because you arrest someone and charge them doesn't mean automatically they're guilty and should be locked up pending their trial.
Guilt or innocence doesn't really weigh into the facts for bail. The police serve serve the facts based on the facts given to the magistrate. He may at that first opportunity he may think, well, look, there's some circumstances in relation to this that I'm not real clear about. Perhaps the police may want to find and supply some more information in the next couple of days. And if he's not completely satisfied, he may well grab that. But at the first opportunity, when he's arrested, there's no presumption for bail. So similarly, if there was the offence of two guys for having a fight in a pub and both flogged each other and both were charged with various assaults, they would be given bail in their own undertaking to appear at court in 3 weeks' time. Mm. But at the first bail opportunity, when they're first arrested, there's no presumption for bail for armed robbery.
Who decides whether there's a presumption or whether there is? Where do we find those rules?
How do you mean?
Well, I see a lot of times where somebody is arrested, and you see it in the paper that police have allowed bail. So, is it you're standing in the charge room at the police station or whatever the case may be, and the officer on duty or whatever, you know, looks at it and goes, well, he's alleged to have done this or that, and under the Crimes Act, we'll give him bail.
You give him bail under the Bail Act.
Okay, right.
That's actually what I was after.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. No, that's exactly what I was after. So it's in the Bail Act, is it?
It's the Bail Act, yeah.
But,
right.
Gentlemen, there are two types of bail.
Right.
There's the bail that the police give after arrest.
Right.
And then there's the bail that a court gives when that person is brought before a court at the earliest available opportunity.
Well, what's
the difference?
Yeah, that's right.
The difference is that the police have a discretion at the time of charging, where there is no independent scrutiny, it's merely the opinion of the officer responsible for granting the bail.
Right.
Whereas in a court, it's scrutinised by lawyers in an open public forum, unlike in a police station where no one sees it.
Right, right. So do you think, Alex, that bail in either circumstance, but I guess in particular in the police circumstance, is either too easy or too difficult to obtain for a client or for somebody who might be in for an offence?
I think it's too simple to put it in those general terms.
Right.
For people charged with very serious offences against the community, particularly if they have a record already, and particularly if the police case is very strong, the magistrate may quite properly be very, very reticent in granting bail.
Right.
But for the average Joe, who's charged with a relatively minor offence, there are cases of people languishing in jail because they can't produce the surety required, and great injustice does take place.
Right. And because there was a case some time ago where a man was alleged to have, I think, murdered his or severely assaulted his wife at the time, but he was ended up getting bail. Now, as I understand that particular case, and I don't know whether we can go into specifics here or not, but on those circumstances, there was her word against his that an assault had taken place, and that, but there was no prior convictions or criminalia, if you like, other than something way, way back when he was a juvenile. So therefore, he was able to obtain bail. Is that sort of thing? Is that a common thing?
Are you asking? You know, it's difficult to talk about things collectively. I mean, each particular offence that we talk about, it must be taken on its merits.
Yeah, but what about the person himself? Isn't that taken on the merits as well?
Oh, sure. As Alex rightly pointed out, I mean, if a fellow produces it at court with more form than better loosen up, well, on the balance, his chances of getting bail are unlikely.
Yeah.
Particularly for serious things like failing to appear.
Yeah.
If you have three or four offences of fail to appear, it's unlikely that you would get bail simply because you have shown on three occasions that you're not a fit and proper person that would in fact present himself to court in the arrangements.
Yeah.
One of the things that makes it very difficult for people charged with offences to get bail is that many of them come from poor families.
Right.
Many of them have very poor community ties, and there is no one in their family who owns a home, for example, to be put up as a surety.
Yeah.
So the system is slanted in favour of those who've got a big bank balance and those who have access to large amounts of property. The average person who doesn't have access to that can have extraordinary difficulty getting bail, and there are people in jail for a year or 2 years awaiting trial who are found not guilty.
Alex, can I just ask you this question? Do you think that it makes a difference to your client and your client's case if compared to, if on one hand you had your client in custody at his trial compared to, say, having him out on bail? Do you think there's a different perception by a court or jury against how they view that client?
Juries often shouldn't find out whether someone's been in custody if the trial is properly conducted.
But can I just point out, there are some people who are in custody who are in the traditional prison greens because they're not provided with or don't have the required clothing, and they do look like they are in custody.
Well,
have you had clients like that?
Absolutely. More often than not, people manage to find some clothes. But if someone looks like a prisoner, yes, it weighs on the mind of the jury. But, Nick, there's another aspect. Someone in custody for a year or more has very little opportunity to properly prepare their case and meet with their lawyers, mm-hmm. because their lawyers have to come to them in prison.
Just back to the thing where you were saying about people not being able to have the surety, or the you know that it's in essence a wealthy person is going to be a lot better off than somebody who's less fortunate. Isn't that really just a case, or isn't that part of the whole legal system? I mean, really, isn't there a fair suggestion that there's one law for the rich and one for the poor, if you will? You know, if you're in jail, if you've been picked up on the street for whatever the offence might be and you've got nothing, the hope of you getting any kind of decent trial or decent defence is fairly minimal. But if you're somebody like, Kerry Packer, for the sake of the argument, you can afford the very best lawyers that there are, and so your defence is going to be a far better than that other poor fellow.
Look, money does talk, but a good lawyer can explain to a court that someone who comes up with $5,000, for them, that can be a very large amount of money,
sure,
and acceptable as surety, whereas a wealthy stockbroker might have to put up $250,000.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Listen, I think that the thing, conditions with bail for lodging of money would be proportional to the person's income. Alex hit it on the head. You know, if you're a multi-millionaire or a stockbroker, $1 million surety may be enough to keep you in line till your next court appearance. And if old mate's only got $5,000 and that's stretching his best that he's got, I mean, so be it.
Well, why do you think then that Pauline Hanson didn't get bail? Now she's ultimately won her case. She tried several times. I think it went to the High Court, didn't it?
Nick, that's a different type of bail. That's known as appeal bail. She had already been found guilty by a jury in Queensland,
right,
and when she made an application for bail after that fact, it now turns out that the Queensland Court of Appeal has quashed that conviction, and it was quite erroneous.
Yeah.
But at the time, she was someone who was a convicted person, and appeal bail is very, very difficult to get.
Yeah, okay. All right, just finally to finish up, Detective, do you think that the bail laws, as they stand at the moment, are appropriate?
Well, I think considering all the circumstances, they're the best that we have.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like looking for a car. If you're tout for business, you'll eventually get bail.
And do you think then that because the opposition are always calling tougher bail laws, and they're urging people for tougher bail laws, do you see that they could be toughened up in any great way?
I don't know whether bail should be toughened up. I think there should be an introduction of a minimum sentence.
Right.
That's probably more appropriate in line of the murders, et cetera, that have been happening in Sydney for the last 5 or 6 weeks.
Can I just interrupt? Scott. Can I interrupt just here? Because I just reminded myself about that Silverwater thing, and I think it's relevant at this point. We did an interview last week on the show with a representative from the Department of Corrective Services who indicated that Silverwater, the Metropolitan Remand and Reception Prison, is presently overcrowded. And the comment we got was, we can't build prisons fast enough. Now, how does that fit in with entitlement to bail, as far as both of you go? I want your opinions on this. Should people be entitled to bail because prisons don't have the capacity to hold them? I mean, is that fair?
People should be entitled to bail because they have the presumption of innocence. It has nothing to do with how much space there is in a jail, and the politicians have to work out, are they fair dinkum when it comes to a justice system that properly processes those who go through it? Silverwater, because of its overcrowding, is a violent, dangerous place.
Detective?
Yeah, prison is a very dangerous and violent place, but it's a difficult and a conversation that could last over days, involving the politics, whichever side you want to be on. But at the end of the day, the police are only instruments of the politics, and the politicians make the politics and the rules. So the police can only play by the rules that they have enforced with them. And in relation to bail, it's up to the police may well oppose bail, but there's many a times where police have opposed bail and bail's been granted the very next day. And there's times when people have been presented to court the police would think would get bail and haven't given bail. It's not for the police or the defence to determine. At the end of the day, it's up to the magistrate or the judge to decide eventually.
There I agree with my learned police officer.
Look, gentlemen, we've run out of time. We could go on, I'm sure, for hours on this point. Thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Good pleasure, indeed, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Alexander Howen, barrister in the New South Wales criminal justice system and a detective known as Dave. We can only mention him as Dave in the New South Wales Police Service on the topic of bail today. If you've got any comments, why don't you join us and give us a call on 131 873 here on 2GB.
Okay, we've got Ross on the line who's got something to say about Alex and the detective and bail. Ross.
Yeah, how you going there, fellas?
Not bad. What can we do for you?
I just listened to that bullfed copper and that mouthpiece yarning about bail.
Oh, yeah.
I reckon the bail act sucks.
Really? Why?
I had trouble getting bail for my brother about a month ago.
Right.
And they put $10,000 surety on him.
Jeez, that's a lot. What did he do?
What do you mean by $10,000 surety?
Well, I had to front $10,000 up. On a Friday night, where do you get 10 grand unless you're doing business?
Yeah, no, what was he charged with? Or can you say?
Nothing real bad, a couple of armed robberies.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's probably a fair call then.
But he hasn't been done from before, so he would have got bail. He got bail the next day anyway.
So did he ever fail to appear?
Oh, no, he hadn't failed to appear, but so, he's done a couple of lags.
So what do you mean by lags?
Jail, you know.
He's been to jail.
Yeah.
Right. All
right.
Just don't mention his name, please.
Oh,
okay?
No, I wouldn't. No, I'm not going to give him up to anyone.
No. The $10,000, was that set by a police officer, by a magistrate?
Set by a beak at Parramatta.
A magistrate.
A night court.
Right. Okay. And what happened? Did you go back again and try and get the bail reduced?
Well, I got bail the next day.
Yes.
But they still retained the ten. We had to go and get the 10 grand the next day.
So right. You actually got it at the end.
Yeah.
Right.
Off some rellos.
Yeah. Right.
And freighted it up. But you know, like, he hasn't failed to appear before.
No, I know. But
he hasn't done a runner or nothing.
I'm just playing the devil's advocate here.
You're doing a good job of that, mate.
Thanks. The 10 grand though, doesn't that do its job? Doesn't that now guarantee your brother's appearance at court?
But I have nothing to do with my brother. I'm not his keeper. He's a grown man.
Yeah.
So why should it be placed on me?
Well, what do you think was fair?
Well, I thought he could have reported three times a week or every day, you know, Monday in mornings or something like that, every morning, like weekdays or something like that.
Now, $10,000 seems, I guess, like a lot to your family.
Yeah, it is. We're on the breadline.
Right, okay. And you scraped it up somehow.
Yeah, we did.
All right.
Had to do a whip around with the family.
All right, Ross, thanks for your call.
All right, fellas.
Appreciate it, mate.
Thanks a lot, mate. Yeah, well, there you go. Ross on the line. $10,000 bail. Gee, that's a lot, isn't it?
It is when you think about it.
I mean, that's a lot of money for most people.
Well, I don't have $10,000 in spare cash.
Yeah, to try and come up with. I don't know whether. I assume it was cash he had to come up with?
I think that's the go. You've got to come up with the physical cash. You can't just roll up with a cheque.
Right, right. Can't turn up with a MasterCard or something.
Or a car or something and put it on the doorstep.
Yeah,
of the
I mean, that's got to be hard.
Yeah, I think it is pretty hard for a lot of people. Then again, it's you've got to understand from the perspective, and I try to play the devil's advocate here. You've got to try and put it in the perspective of the state who wants to ensure that the defendant does show up to court, and $10,000 is a lot of money to use for someone, as Ross put it, who's on the breadline.
Sure, going to definitely make it. Mind you, his brother had, what did he say, done a couple of lags.
A couple of lags.
I think that's terminology for a couple of times in jail.
Yeah. If you've got a comment, 131873.
And on a mobile is Isabel. Isabel, what did you want to say about bail?
Look, I've been listening to what you've been talking about this bail situation.
Can you just put your radio down a little bit, please?
Oh, sorry, yeah. Okay. Is that better?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, thank you. Oh, sorry, I didn't do that properly. Look, I just have this opinion that it's far too easy for people to get bail.
Right.
You see guys that have done the most horrendous things, and they seem to be able to get bail. It just seems like the richer you are, the easier it is to get out of jail, regardless of what you've done.
Yeah, that's actually the comment, though.
But hang on. Isabel, you just said regardless of what you've done.
That's right.
They're accused of it.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Regardless of what you're accused of, absolutely.
Right.
And everyone's entitled to the presumption of innocence, I guess, as they say in their paper.
Yeah.
Until proven guilty, but you know, sometimes it just seems like the facts you read about it, and it just seems like these people should be put away until they're tried.
All right, but hang on. If you hit the nail on the head, the facts that you read about, you said, but it goes to trial eventually, and these people are, let's say, some of them are found innocent. What's your feelings
you know,
in that instance?
I know it's tragic that some innocent people are put in jail and they are found innocent, but then you have to think whether that outweighs the risk to society of those that are found guilty who are let out, who commit other crimes in the meantime.
No, that's a fair call. People that are out on bail that do commit crimes, and frankly, there's a lot of that happens.
I read about it all the time and I know it happens.
Yeah,
I agree. Just before we wind up the call, Isabel, how would you feel if you were charged with an offence that you were not guilty of, and you were refused bail?
Well, I'd be very upset.
No, that's a fair call, and I think everyone would be.
But on the other hand, I suppose I have to abide by what I said. And
yeah, and exactly, Nick. And what if some other lunatic was out on bail who had a murdering history and killed Isabel's sister? You know, she's not going to be happy about that one, is she?
No, that's it. That's exactly right. You know, who knows? She killed that little girl yesterday.
That's right.
Could well have been out on bail for something else he did that was awful.
Well, that's the possibility as well.
Thanks a lot, Isabel.
Oh, pleasure.
Thanks for your call.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow.
Well, you know, I don't think you can argue that. I think we've had the full spectrum there. We've got people that are all for it and people that are against it. But I think it's a good point, though, Fish. Sorry, Nick, that if somebody's out on bail and they commit another crime, then is that as bad for society as if that somebody else didn't get bail? You know what
yep,
I mean?
Yep.
So, you know, it's a very difficult question and something that no doubt we're going to hear a lot more about.
Yep, absolutely.
On your marks.
If you're thinking of putting your business on the internet,
get set.
Make sure you get the internet domain name you want by registering the name first. Over 4,000 internet domain names are being registered every hour. So even if your company's not ready to get on the internet, you'll want to be able to use your name when the time comes. So protect your business name. Reserve your internet domain name today. Phone Australian Domain Name Registration Services on 9267 2670. 9267 2670.
Scott, you know when sometimes you don't feel like a beer or a mixed drink?
Yes.
Well, the solution to your dilemma is a pre-mixed cocktail from Ice Frozen Cocktails.
Ooh, lovely.
With a range of 11 different flavours, there is something available to wet your whistle.
Ooh.
Try a strawberry daiquiri, looks like I did, a Caribbean colada, or a melon crush.
Mm.
Made to traditional cocktail recipes with real fruit
Ooh.
And the brand name alcohol, all you need to do is chill and serve. You could put a little garnish and an umbrella on it if you want. I keep those in my cupboard.
Mm-hmm, as you do.
Ice frozen cocktails are the ideal solution to serve at your next party. Look for them at a bottle shop near you or call 9523 8622 for this month's party hire special. Ice frozen cocktails.
John Simon from Aussie Home Loans with another Simon Says.
I often get asked what's the most important thing to remember when looking for a home loan. My answer's always the same. Know exactly what you're paying for. Some rates appear low, but when you look at them carefully, you realise you're being charged for features that should be free. Why should making extra payments cost you more? Why should you get hit with a fee to redraw your money? And why should switching to a fixed rate, or better still, a split loan facility, incur a fee? When you add it all up, that rate doesn't look quite so good. Here's my tip. Shop around. And if you're not being looked after, call Aussie on 13 13 33. At Aussie, we'll save you.
Scott and Nick at Night. Have your say on 131 873.
Now, earlier in the show, we talked about how new research shows how lotto winners are more likely to pay off their mortgage and upgrade the family car than buy a Porsche or a penthouse.
Isn't that dull?
It's weird, isn't it?
That's just no fun at all. What's the point of winning if you can't go out there and blow the lot on wild women, song, booze and cars? I mean, what's the point?
Well, go down to the casino and blow it all.
Equally as good.
Under the pretense of or thinking of that you're going to double your money.
That'll do. Well, as long as you don't... I mean... Mortgage, and that's wasted. No point at all.
Now, we've got a caller on the line. We've got Anna in reaction to this. Are you on a cordless or mobile phone there, Anna?
Yes, I am.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. No worries. What did you want to say?
Well, the way I would spend it is probably I donate just a small amount to charity
mm-hmm.
and go on a holiday around the world, and then I just think about what I want to do with the rest.
Where would you go around the world? Just a general trip around Europe and that?
Just half
Paris.
Of the world.
London, Ooh. All around Europe, and, you know, take off a couple of years even, and not worry about money, just
That's
have
good.
That freedom to do
That's
what
good.
I want.
Good
any plan. Can I just ask, is there a particular percentage you have in mind to give away to charity?
Well, I guess that depends how much I win.
How much you win. Well, if you won a million.
If I won a million?
Yeah.
Probably about 100,000.
That's about 10%.
About 10%.
I think that's okay. Great.
That's pretty good.
I think that's good.
Anna, thanks for your call.
Oh, a pleasure.
Okay.
Thanks,
Thank
Anna.
You.
Bye.
Bye.
No, I think 10% is adequate.
10%. 10% seems to be quite the average. I was watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire,
mm-hmm.
and one of the contestants there said that if they won the money, they'd give. Oh no, I think someone did win about $125,000, and they said they'd give away 10% to charity. So 10% seems to be a common figure.
It's probably a tax effective thing.
probably,
I would say. I don't know. No, I think if I won a million, I'd just blow the lot. I'd be straight down to the Ferrari dealership. Although you probably wouldn't get much of a Ferrari. Ferrari for a million nowadays.
Not a good one.
No. I think I want to win one of those ones in America, you know, well, it's $300 or $400 million. And I'd take the lot. Give it to me now, man.
Awesome.
I want it in cash.
Those lotteries are awesome. But, you know, fair enough. A million these days, in terms of buying a house,
is not a lot.
But in terms of buying a car, I think it's reasonable.
Well, I'd buy my car a few times over.
Right. But in terms of buying a house in New South Wales, I mean, $1 million won't get you a great deal.
Well, wouldn't be able to pay the stamp duty on it hardly.
Thank you, Mr. Carr.
Yes, thank you very much. Very kind of you. 131-873 if you've got a thought on winning the lotto or any of the other things we've been chatting about.
You're listening to The Vinyl Lounge with Scott O'Bazza and The Fish.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm very fond of my tea.
What flavour?
I just drink black tea, regular tea.
Has that got a name?
Yes, it's called, the technical term is black tea. And the reason I know that is because Lipton have just spent $2.5 million in this country telling us that instead of just having Lipton Jigglers, it's now called Lipton Black Tea. And I've always put my milk in first and then poured the tea.
No, I don't do that. I'll put the milk in next.
No, we'll see. You're wrong.
Good afternoon, Ross. How are you?
We wanted to discuss tea, if we could, with the relevant person. Now, the ideal brew is made by putting the milk in first, warming a teapot vigorously before filling it with soft water and allowing it to stand for 3 minutes. I think probably the most important question in that is, do you put a tea cosy on it?
Well, no, you don't. You don't put a tea cosy on it.
You don't?
You're the first journalist in the whole world
who's ever asked
that question. No, it's interesting. We've had calls from Australia, Canada, America. It's been a huge story. It's the first time anyone's asked a question about tea cosy, so you made a bit of history.
Only on The Vinyl Lounge every Friday night at 8 p.m. Only on NetFM.
And now, back to Scott and Nick at Night on 2GB 873. Ah, that's us. Back to us at night. Yes, night it is.
Temperature. Yeah, it is very 21.2 degrees, by the way, if you're interested in the weather at Richmond, 26. And tomorrow's forecast, a chance of late showers and thunderstorms, maximum 25. For Tuesday, we're going to hit 26 as the max, and Wednesday, 22 with a low of 17 in Sydney.
Oh, I wonder if the Weather Bureau is using that new high-tech device they've got.
Of the thermometer.
No, a bit of string. If it's wiggling, it's windy. If it's wet, it's raining.
By the way, you can go to the 2GB.com website if you want to check out the weather and all the forecasts, or directly to the Bureau of Meteorology at www.bom.gov.au.
Ooh, how handy.
Thought I'd throw that in.
That's very kind. I'm glad you did. Now, I've got a couple of emails here that I've lost.
I've got one.
Oh, good, because I've lost mine.
Debbie says, I think Pauline Hanson was jailed because she was becoming too powerful and a threat to the major parties.
Oh. If I had another one here and I've lost it, unfortunately. if you've got an email or you want to get us by email, just go to the website, 2gb.com, and click on the feedback button. I had one. It was about, what was it, Lotto. Somebody that I think that was saying that they reckon that a lot of people are now talking that $1 million, if you win Lotto with $1 million, it's not really that much. It sounds to me like a fair whack.
Terry at Baulkham Hills, I think people who claim that $1 million isn't very much are deluded. Did I steal that from you?
I think that's a fair call. No, you steal right away. No problems at all.
Sorry.
One thing that we touched on earlier, right at the beginning of the show, was why people bring out celebrities to this country. Why, for argument's sake, did Kerry Stokes bring Paris and Nicky Hilton out here?
Now, are they related? Are they the, like the Hilton family?
Yes.
Hilton Hotel people?
Yeah, they're the heirs to the fortune.
They're
kids. Wouldn't old Conrad Hilton be, like, turning in his grave?
But they're children.
They are children. They are, I don't know, 22, 23, something like that.
And
professional red carpeters.
Do they have parents?
I assume they did at some point, but I don't know for certain.
But currently living?
I don't know.
I think they do.
If they do, what would they think of their daughters swanning around the world, going to the opening of an envelope in the skimpiest little outfit that you could possibly imagine?
They can't be more than 15 or 16.
I think they're in their 20s.
Are they?
Yeah.
They look very young.
No, they're in their 20s. And they just swan around, booze, kiss celebrities from other television stations, which really doesn't excite the television station that brought them out, and do nothing.
Do nothing.
They have created or achieved or contributed nothing.
They serve no purpose.
Other than they look reasonable.
And they have the name Hilton.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw them on Roy and HG the other night, and talk about vacuous. Like Ned said, they didn't have a brain between them. And apparently after the show, one of them, I don't know, they're both interchangeable near as I can figure, they were howling. It was quoted in the paper that, as a joke, during the break, one of Roy or HG said, oh, so like, where do you get your drugs from? And, ooh, it didn't go over well at all. They just weren't happy, and they, you know how on the cream they get a T-shirt and a pair of shorts and a toilet roller? Yeah. Well, they Nikki, I think it was, whichever one that is, the blonde one, she left hers behind, didn't want to know about it. You could just see in their eyes they didn't want to be there. They'd much rather be down at Flemington or up on the Gold Coast and partying around, getting drunk and spending other people's money. I don't know, it's just weird.
And if they were in Sydney, they wouldn't be able to stay at the Hilton Hotel because that's been renovated.
Well, they don't stay at their own hotels anyway.
Is that right?
Yeah, well, that buggers up part of their inheritance, I imagine, because, you know, they're getting some of the money. They stayed at the Hyatt in Melbourne, I think it was, but left because the in-house movies were duds. I don't know what movies they were hoping to see.
Go out to the cinema.
One of them was in a dirty movie. She did a one of those home movies with Shannon Doherty's ex-husband, I think it was.
Oh.
So, I don't know, maybe they weren't keen on those kind of movies. Who knows?
It's all very strange.
It's a very peculiar world. Now, today being the 9th of November, guess who was born on this day?
I have no idea.
Well, let me give you a hint. He was born in 1941. He's a songwriter. He was part of a enormously famous group in the 70s, a sort of a country rock folk kind of a band, maybe even in the late 60s to 70s. And they still kind of hang around at the moment. There was a whole bunch of them, and they're a something or other revival.
Oh, come on, I don't know.
Well, have a think about it. I'll give you a hint.
And is this a bit of a clue right now?
It is. See if you can guess. Okay, no, obviously you've got no idea.
No.
It's Tom Fogerty from Creedence Clearwater Revival. And 1941 is his birthday. So happy birthday, Tom. From TGB 873.
Some folks are born, made to wave the flag. Cool, they're red, white, and blue. And when the band plays Hail to the Chief,
at night.
Ah, coming up after the news with Gordon Green, we're going to be talking with David Parry, who's the Englishman who's been wandering around England taking photographs of pubs with his camera for Lord only knows what
that
reason.
That guy's amazing.
It's bizarre, isn't it? But he seems to enjoy it. Doesn't drink, apparently, as I understand it. Just takes photos of pubs.
Should be drinking.
One of those eccentric Englishmen thing, I should think. I mean, it just seems a shame to go all the way to a pub and not have a beer, doesn't it? Just take a photo. And we'll also be talking with Michael Tarzizzi from the from the PLO and on his thoughts about the Sydney Peace Prize and the roadmap to peace in the Middle East. All that coming up after the news, which is going to be in 60 seconds with Gordon Green.
Ever wished you had true computing power in your car? Well, Mosaic Industries proudly introduces the first open architecture vehicle PC, the VPC 2000, featuring proprietary designed intelligent 12-volt power supply, ruggedized ATC chassis, Intel motherboard and a touchscreen LCD monitor. With standard software including either Windows 98 or 2000, GPS navigation, DVD and MP3 players. The VPC 2000 is used by police cars, fleet trucks and personal vehicles for navigation and wireless internet. So if you're running a fleet, this is the computing solution you've been waiting for. The VPC 2000 by Mosaic. For more information, check out our website at mosaic.com.au.